Chapter 8. The Barrow. As Ellenwy had said, the passageway was more comfortable, for they could walk side by side without crouching and scuttling like rabbits in a warren. Unlike those of the upper galleries, the walls were lined with huge, flat stones. The ceiling was formed of even larger stones, whose weight was supported by upright slabs set at intervals along the square corridor. The air, too, smelled slightly better, musty as if it had lain unstirred for ages, but without the choking closeness of the tunnels. None of this comforted Taryn greatly. Ellenwy herself had admitted that she had never explored the passage. Her blithe confidence did not convince him she had the slightest notion of where she was going. Nevertheless, the girl hurried along, her sandals tapping and echoing, the golden light of the bauble casting its rays through the shadows that hung like cobwebs. They passed a few side galleries, which Ellenwy ignored.
"We'll go straight to the end of this one," she announced. "There's bound to be something there."
Taryn had begun wishing himself back in the chamber.
"We shouldn't have come this far," he said with a frown. "We should have stayed and found some way to climb out. Now you don't even know how long it'll be before this passage stops. We might go tramping on for days."
Something else troubled him, though. After all their progress, it seemed the passage should now go in an upward direction.
"The tunnel's supposed to bring us up about ground," Taryn said, "but we haven't stopped going down.
We aren't coming out at all. We're only going deeper and deeper." Ellenwy paid no attention to his remarks. But she was soon obliged to. Within another few paces, the corridor stopped abruptly, sealed by a wall of boulders.
"That's what I feared," cried Taryn, dismayed. "We've gone to the end of your tunnel, that you knew so much about, and this is what we find. Now we can only go back. We're lost all our time, and we're no better off than when we started."
He turned away while the girl stood looking curiously at the barrier.
"I can't understand," said Ellenwy, "why anyone would go through the trouble of building a tunnel and not have it go any place. It must have been a terrible amount of work for whoever was to dig it and set in all the rocks. Why do you suppose—"
"I don't know, and I wish you'd stop wondering about things that can't make any difference to us! I'm going back," Taryn said, "and I don't know how I'm going to climb onto that shelf, but I can certainly do it a lot more easier than digging through a wall."
"Well," Ellenwy said, "it is very strange, Noel. I'm not sure I know where we are."
"I knew you'd end up getting lost. I could have told you that."
"I didn't say I was lost," the girl protested. "I only said I didn't know where I was. There's a big difference. When you're lost, you really don't know where you are. When you just don't happen to know where you are at the moment, that's something else entirely. I know I'm underneath Spiral Castle, and that's quite good for a start."
"You're splitting hairs," Taryn said. "Lost is lost. You're worse than Dalben."
"Who's Dalben?"
"Dalben is my—" "Never mind!" His face grimmed. Taryn began retracing his steps. Ellenwy hurried to join him.
"We could have a look in one of the side passageways," she said.
Taryn disregarded the suggestion. Nevertheless, approaching the next branch and gallery, he slowed his steps and peered briefly into the gloom.
"Go ahead," Ellenwy urged. "Let's try this one. It seems as good as any."
"Hush!"
Taryn bent his head and listened intently. From the distance came a faint whispering and rustling.
"There's something." "Well, by all means, let's find out what," said Ellenwy, prodding Taryn in the back. "Go ahead, will you?"
Taryn took a few cautious steps. The passage here was lower and seemed to slope still further down. With Ellenwy beside him, he continued gingerly, setting each foot carefully, remembering the sudden sickening fall that had brought him here in the first place. The whispering became a high keening, a wail of torment. It was as though voices had been spun out like threads, twisted taut and ready to snap. An icy current wove through the air, carrying along with it hollow sighs and a smell of dull mutterings. There were other sounds, too, though, raspings and shriekings like sword points dragging over stones. Taryn felt his hands tremble. He hesitated a moment and gestured for Ellenwy to stay behind him.
"Give me the light," he whispered, "and wait for me here." "Do you think it's ghosts?"
Ellenwy asked.
"I don't have any beans to spit at them, and that's about the only thing you can really do for a ghost. You know, I don't think it's ghosts at all. I've never heard one, although I suppose they could sound like that if they wanted to, but I don't see why they should bother. No, I think it's the wind making all those noises."
"Wind? How could there be—" "Wait," Taryn said. "You might be right. There might be an opening."
Closing his ears to the horrifying sounds and preferring to think of them as drafts of air rather than spectral voices, Taryn quickened his pace. Ellenwy, paying no attention to his order to wait, strode along with him. They soon arrived at the end of the passage. Once more, fallen stones blocked their way,
but this time it was a narrow, jagged gap. From it, the wailing grew louder, and Terran felt a cold ribbon of air on his face. He thrust the light into the opening, but even the golden rays could not pierce the curtain of shadows. Terran slid cautiously past the barrier. Ellenwe followed. They entered a low-ceilinged chamber, and as they did, the light flickered under the weight of the darkness. At first, Terran could only make indistinct shapes out, touched with a feeble green glow. The voices screamed in a trembling rage. Despite the chill wind, Terran's forehead was clammy. He raised the light and took another step forward. The shapes grew clearer. Now he distinguished outlines of shields hanging from walls and piles of swords and spears. His foot struck something. He bent to look and sprang back again, stifling a cry. It was the withered corpse of a man! A warrior, fully armed! Another lay beside him, and another! In a circle of ancient dead, guarding a high stone slab on which a shadowy figure lay at full length. Ellenwe paid scant attention to the warriors, having found something more interesting to her. "I'm sure Akron hasn't any idea at all this is here," she whispered, pointing at the heaps of otter-skin robes and great earthen jars overflowing with jewels. Weapons glistened amongst stacks of helmets. Woven baskets held brooches, collar pieces, and chains. "She'd have hauled it out long ago. She loves jewelry, you know, though it doesn't become her one bit." "Surely it's the barrow of a king who built the castle," Terran said in a hushed voice. He stepped past the warriors and drew near the figure on the slab. Rich raiment clothed the body, polished stones glowed at its broad belt. The clawed hands still grasped the jeweled hilt of a sword as though ready to unsheath it. Terran recoiled in fear and horror. The skull seemed to grimace in defiance, daring a stranger to spoil the royal treasures. As Terran turned, a gust of wind caught at his face. "I think there's a passage," he called. "There, in the far wall!" He ran in the direction of the ghostly cries. Close to the sound, a tunnel opened. He could smell fresh air, and his lungs drank deeply. "Hurry!" he urged. Terran snatched a sword from a warrior's bony hand and scrambled into the tunnel. The tunnel was the narrowest they'd encountered. Flat on his belly, Terran squeezed and fought his way over the loose stones. Behind him, he heard Ellenwe gasping and struggling, and then a new sound began, a distant booming and throbbing. The earth shuddered as the pounding increased. Suddenly, the passageway convulsed, and hidden roots of trees sprung up. The ground split beneath Terran, heaving and crumbling. In another instant, he was flung out at the bottom of a rocky slope. A great crash resounded deep within the hill. Spiral Castle, high above him, was bathed in blue fire. The sudden gale nearly battered Terran to the ground. A tree of lightning crackled in the sky. A great crash resounded deep within the hill. Spiral Castle, high above him, was bathed in blue fire. A sudden gale nearly battered Terran to the ground. A tree of lightning crackled in the sky. Behind him, Ellenwe called for help. She was half in, half out of the narrow passage. As Terran wrestled with the fallen stones, the walls of Spiral Castle shook like gray rags. The towers lurched madly. Terran clawed away clumps of earth and roots. "I'm all tangled up with the sword," Ellenwe panted. "The scabbard's caught on something." Terran heaved at the last rock. "What sword?" he said through gritted teeth. He seized Ellenwe under the arms and pulled her free. "Oof," she gasped. "I feel as if I had all my bones taken apart and put together wrong." "The sword. You said you needed weapons, didn't you? And you took one, so I thought I might as well." In a violent explosion that seemed ripped from the very center of the earth, Spiral Castle crumbled in on itself. The mighty stones of the walls split like twigs, their jagged ends thrusting at the sky. And then a deep silence fell. The wind was still, and the air was oppressive. "Thank you for saving my life," said Ellenwe. "For an assistant pigkeeper, I must say you're quite courageous. It is wonderful when people surprise you that way." "I wonder what happened to Akron," she went on. "She'll be really furious," she added with a delighted laugh, "and probably blame everything on me. She's always punishing me for things I haven't even thought of yet."
"If Akron is under those stones, she'll never punish anyone again," Terran said, "but I don't think we better stay to find out." He buckled on his sword. The blade Ellenwe had taken from the barrow was too long for the girl to wear comfortably at her waist, so she had it slung from her shoulder. Terran looked at the weapon with surprise.
"Why, that's the sword the king was holding!"
"Naturally," said Ellenwe. "It should be the best one, shouldn't it?"
She picked up the glowing sphere. "We're at the far side of the castle, what used to be the castle. Your friend is down there, among those trees, assuming he waited for you.
I'd be surprised if he did, with all this going on.
They ran toward the grove. Ahead, Terran saw the shadowy forms of a cloaked figure and a white horse.
There they are, he cried. Gwydion! Gwydion!
The moon swung from behind the clouds. The figure turned. Terran stopped short in the sudden brightness, and his jaw dropped. He had never seen this man before.